In April 2016, computer technicians at the Democratic National Committee discovered that their computer servers had been hacked. In the days and weeks that followed, they learned that the cyber thieves had taken sensitive documents, emails, and donor information. And although President-elect Trump continues to question it, it's become clear that Russia's spy service was behind the hacks. In his latest book, The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election, Malcolm W. Nance follows the story through a labyrinth of cyber espionage while detailing Donald Trump's many personal associations with Vladimir Putin and the Russian oligarchy. Malcolm Nance is a New York Times bestselling author who served as a career counterterrorism and intelligence officer for the U.S. government's special operations, homeland security, and intelligence agencies. And I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Hasn't your specialty in the field of national security policy been in anti- and counterterrorism intelligence in the fight against ISIS and other jihadist groups? Is this a departure for you?
Well, it's not much of a departure. Because anyone who knows the intelligence community over the last 30 years, I've been involved in almost 35 years, will know back in the 1980s, everyone, and I mean every officer, every collector, anyone who was involved in the military or the intelligence community was always briefed about the Russians. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that they brief you about is they brief you about counterintelligence, Russian spies coming to recruit you to be an agent for the Soviet Union at that time. So we're all steeped in the old school KGB tactics. And what's so interesting about why I wrote this book is because I saw those tactics pop up and become very apparent that someone, and a lot of people, led by the spy master in chief, Vladimir Putin, was using KGB operational techniques to carry out this operation.
The KGB doesn't exist anymore, but he was He worked for its successor.
Yes, as a matter of fact. Well, you know, people say that. I have a famous.
How different are they?
Oh, they're not different at all. As a matter of fact, the only thing that changed were the letters. And in 1991, they removed the border guards from the KGB and changed its name to the Office of State Security, the FSB. They actually had an interim agency in between there, the FSK. But none of the missions, none of the operations, none of the people changed. So today's FSB is the KGB, only with more interesting tools.
Now, in looking into this story, I'm assuming you have all sorts of insights that a journalist might not have had. You saw the story differently.
Oh, yes. And people say that, you're reporting. I'm not a journalist. I don't report. What I do is I'm an intelligence collector who has decades of experience. So I see things differently. And what's interesting about the timeline of my book, I first noted and actually on NBC on July 25th said once the hacks had come out at the morning of the DNC convention in Philadelphia, I said, this isn't a hack, which we had been watching since April. This is a large-scale cyber warfare operation against the United States perpetrated by Vladimir Putin. And because of my intelligence officer's ability to see this in a different light as a journalist, my book tracked directly with with the CIA report that came out on September 23rd. On September 23rd, my book went to print. The CIA delivered their copy to the president.
So you didn't have to update it.
No, I didn't have to update it at all. It's still valid. And as a matter of fact, it came out 3 months ago.
Now, the hack, it was discovered in April 2016, just a few months ago. When did the actual hacking first occur?
They're not quite sure, but the first time that they believe that the entities infiltrated into the DNC servers was sometime in spring 2015. So almost a year they were inside the servers of the DNC, and it was looting, just mass wholesale taking of everything inside the servers.
So all sorts of information indiscriminately taken?
No. Every aspect of the DNC's internal communications, all emails, voicemails that were left by donors and constituents to the DNC, the voicemails of all of the DNC senior staff, they were systematically taken over a period of time.
How do we know what was taken?
Oh, well, that's just forensic analytics that are done by the cybersecurity companies that were contracted. CrowdStrike, the company that famously named these cyber entities, these malware packages, Cozy Bear and Fancy Bear, they were brought in to do the forensic analysis. And while they were there, the Russians were active and in the server stealing files in front of them. They caught them in the act. And essentially, what is Watergate 2.0? They broke into the DNC and wholesale looted it.
What happens when you catch them into the act? In the act, can you send back a message saying, ha-ha, see you in the room?
Well, no, you don't want to
because
do that.
Because right now there's been a lot of talk about what some see as an inadequate response to all of this at the time.
Well, at this point, all you can do when you're actually catching them in the act is cut off their access to the servers, right? That you have to understand, the DNC is not an intelligence agency. It is not a government organization. They are a private entity, and they can only do what they're capable of doing using open private organizations like CrowdStrike and things like that. The FBI does not protect them. The NSA does not protect them.
So this was really a matter of locking the barn doors after the horses have been stolen.
Oh, yeah. And the horses continued to be stolen, according to Donna Brazil, right up to the day of the election.
What makes you and other experts so sure that the Russian government was behind the hacks as opposed to the Chinese government, for instance, or a number of freelancers?
Right. The way that they use hacks are sort of like weapon systems. I call them cyber weapon systems, and people in the cybersecurity community don't like that. But in the intelligence community, we see them as that. When they come in, it's not just them picking the door locks and getting into the computers. Often they have to go in offensively and leave, behind these little cyber landmines that allow them to get further access, and then they loot wholesale. So the information that identified the Russians was definitive. The fingerprints led back to servers in Moscow associated with numerous Russian intelligence hacks in Germany, Estonia, Georgia, the Ukraine. They shut down 3 power plants in the Ukraine remotely from a Russian intelligence building in December 2015, same fingerprints.
And there were fears that something similar could happen here.
Sure.
But shouldn't I assume the United States has engaged in similar activities in regard to foreign governments? Weren't we hacking Angela Merkel, for example?
Well, that wasn't hacking. That was intercepting. And there's a big technical difference between that. Everyone, has always steamed open the letters of diplomats and has conducted espionage. But what we're talking about here is something completely different. This is an order of magnitude different than that has happened in the past. This isn't like we took $20 million and bought a trade union in Venezuela and started handing out pamphlets on the street. This was literally Watergate, a second time, only successfully done, and precision damage was inflicted by Russian intelligence against Hillary Clinton and the DNC.
One of the big differences here that much of the material has been made public in an effort, many claim, to affect the election results. If you're stealing other people's information, you might just use it secretly to formulate your policies, but this is something quite different.
That's interesting because that's what the Chinese do. In 2008, John McCain and Barack Obama's campaigns were hacked by the Chinese. John McCain actually wrote a letter about Chinese policy in relation to Taiwan. It was taken from his computer, and the Chinese lodged a diplomatic protest before the letter was ever sent. So we knew that they had gone into the computer. The Chinese are more precise about it. The Russians hack and use and exploit what they've taken from a computer like we drink water. The United States uses cyber weapon systems and cyber capabilities like this the way a precision sniper would take one shot in 20 years.
My guess is Malcolm Nance, who has written The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Try to Steal the 2016 Election. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Did the hacks could go on continuously, or were they sporadic?
Well, the hacks went on continuously, according to Donna Brazil, because they not only got what was inside the DNC. Soon afterwards, by July, they were hacking the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And they used a very interesting technique, which they use for all the rest, spear phishing, which is when you click on a link from an email that may look like an authorized email, it floods your computer with malware, and then it links you back to a computer where they rob everything. The DCCC had donors' money taken, donors' logins, staff logins. The DSCC was infected. Then, when they couldn't get directly to Hillary Clinton's emails, they went to all her senior staff, like John Podesta and others, and got her emails that way.
And yet, she was criticized for not protecting her emails. She seems to be the only one they couldn't get to.
That server appears to be secure.
But according to an article in the New York Times, part of the problem was that somebody stupidly was taken in by one of those requests for a change of password, the kind of thing that you and I get those things all the time. It just simply delete. I understand that somebody is, and that was John Podesta's office, wasn't it?
Yes. And the technique is called typo squatting. And that's where what they do is they'll send you a link and it will look exactly like the email that you would see from like Amazon or Gmail or something along that lines. And it'll say, oh, we found a security problem, change your password. But if you look carefully at the email, you know, it won't be Leonard Lopate, L-O-P-A-T-E. It'll be lopate.e.com. Hmm. And you will click on that and it fakes a website and will bring you out and flood your computer with malware. And then, of course, they have watch your keystrokes, they'll watch your camera, and they'll steal everything inside.
So if that stupid decision hadn't been made by John Podesta or one of his staff, none of this would have happened?
Not at all. Not at all. Because, no, I mean, it would have happened.
Would have found other ways.
You would have found other ways. We're talking about the equivalent. The organization is called the Special Communications and Information Service, Russia's NSA. And the malware and equipment that they use is worth enormous amounts of money. They will find their way in.
What is kompromat?
Kompromat is a Russian word that means to compromise. Hmm. However, what it is, it's a form of political warfare that Vladimir Putin has mastered using stolen information against his political enemies and rivals to get them out of the way. So, for example, there was one prosecutor that was carrying out a deep investigation of the Putin regime about corruption. And what they did was they stole everything in his computer, found, you know, videos and emails of a sexual liaison, and they just blackmailed him with it. And they compromised you. So we have had possibly the largest kompromat operation in the history of the world.
But it's also been pointed out that if we try to do something similar to Vladimir Putin, he has control over the Russian press.
Sure.
And it really would not have the same kind of impact what happened here, where our press repeated everything that WikiLeaks spilled.
Precisely as Donald Trump instructed, right? The press would greatly reward the Russians. So, no, we don't have the effect, what we call the battle damage effect, against Putin. He wouldn't care one way or the other. He's an autocrat. He runs the nation as a dictatorship and no one will challenge him. He runs the media. However, the best way to get back to them is that he has a lot of oligarchs and mafioso that run the illicit cyber world in Russia. And if you want to get back at a nation like that, you don't go after the Kremlin to start a war. You go after the oligarchs and the cyber criminals and you take their money, which is all illegal.
But we've already been doing that, and we've applied all sorts of sanctions, and it doesn't seem to have had much impact.
Well, there's a difference between actually conducting a cyber warfare operation where you seize all of their illicit money from around the world and then tell them about it so that they have to go complain to Vladimir Putin. That's viable because none of that is legal, right?
And could that have been done with the Panama Papers?
It could have been, but no one actually cares about the content of the papers except the media. Going and taking the money that they may have generated, that would get their attention in terms of cyber warfare.
Malcolm Nance's book, The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Tried to Steal the 2016 Election, published by Skyhorse. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Malcolm Nance. His book, The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Try to Steal the 2016 Election. It is published by Skyhorse Publishing. And you refer to Donald Trump as an unwitting asset to Russia. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, early on, Mike Morrell, the former deputy director of the CIA and acting director of the CIA for a period of time, referred to Donald Trump as an unwitting agent of the Kremlin. Well, agent is an actual term of art. It means someone who is actually in the pay and or who has been professionally handled by a foreign intelligence service. And I don't believe Donald Trump is being handled knowingly by a foreign intelligence service.
There are no secret drops
right,
in parks.
And there's no covert communications. So, but he can be an asset. An asset is somebody who works in your interest, who you can develop as an asset, who may not know that the strings are on his, you know, are moving him around.
Well, to some degree, is that because he has been interested in owning real estate in Russia, and then there was the Miss Universe pageant in Moscow in 2013.
Right, and you know, this is probably the single most understudied bit of journalism that I have not found any references to. When did Donald Trump ideologically turn into a lover of the oligarchy and an admirer of Vladimir Putin? We don't have any references as to when he adopted the Kremlin's entire foreign policy regime of pushing back in Eastern Europe, disbanding NATO, destroying the European Union, all of the things he said in the campaign. What we did when I wrote the book was like all the same report that the CIA wrote, was work backwards through his statements. And we can come to a point where in the campaign he said these things. But to adopt that ideology, you would had to have developed it over time.
Weren't people surprised when he brought the Miss Universe pageant to Moscow?
Sure, he was surprised. But he was brought in by a family called the Olagarovs, who were oligarchs, right? Really rich people, $100 billion. People that, you know, funds that Donald Trump could never imagine owning. And they brought him there because they saw him on Celebrity Apprentice. And they loved him as, you know, the authoritarian boss who said, you're fired. They brought him there. They did Miss Universe. And while he was there, he was surrounded by the Russian oligarchy, most likely flooded with information about why Russia is the possible partner in American Christian axis against, you know, the Islamic world. And that's where his worldview appears to have changed to.
It's unclear as to whether he actually met Vladimir Putin. He claimed that they kind of met on 60 Minutes when, of course, the segments were shot in different places. Did they meet when he was in Moscow with the Miss Universe pageant?
You know, no one knows. And if he did, I think Donald Trump is just so absolutely desperate to be loved by people who have much more money than him. And he seems to have fostered this admiration of Vladimir Putin to the point where he lied, perhaps, about saying that he has connections to Putin. He does. The Olagarovs are one degree of separation from Putin, and they always have a KGB officer on their staff to make sure that their loyalty is assured.
But he also had another kind of connection through Paul Manafort, the national chairman of his presidential campaign and a close advisor, who had a good relationship with Viktor Yanukovych, the deposed leader of the Ukraine and a Putin loyalist.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And that was reported upon extensively earlier this
year. Didn't seem to have much of an impact.
You know, but it didn't have any impact. He actually lives in Trump Tower right now to this day and still advises the Trump administration. But it was determined by the Ukrainian counter-corruption police that he was taking cash payments, large cash payments, one of which was designed to, now this is a very interesting facet, was designed to cancel a NATO exercise in Crimea with the Ukrainian armed forces to create protest. And then that exercise was canceled. And a year later, Russia invades Crimea and takes it.
Beside the personal animosity between Vladimir Putin and Hillary Clinton, what do you see as the main reason Putin might prefer a Trump presidency?
Well, you know, the way I see it is that Vladimir Putin was a former human intelligence officer that ran spies into West Germany to steal computer technology, ironically. And I think he recognized something in Donald Trump very early on at Miss Universe, that this is an American that understood the street. He would do wrestling. He would do TV shows. He would understand the street. And he probably thought, if we get the oligarchs around him, we can bring him along to where he could be a beneficial asset speaking to the West about what Russia wants. Little did he know that he would run for president. And when he did, he threw the entire Soviet, which is the same, the entire Russian intelligence apparatus after him, got every bit of data that could help him, and then released it in a scheduled operation, which we're investigating today.
There are other terms here that I think most of our listeners are unaware of. Cyber bears, Guccifer 2.0.
Can you
tell us what they are?
Sure. And I'll try not to be very technical. The names that are out there, I collectively refer to all Russian hacking entities as the bears, right? It comes from CrowdStrike's name that they name these operations. Cyber bears are all the Russian cyber warfare organizations, which are comprised of Russian intelligence, right? Militias of young men who just are Russian nationalists who will hack in favor of Russia. We call them militia bears. Then the
are they under the control of the government?
They're under the direction of the government by using Russia TV and media to focus them towards targets. And we saw that in Estonia. They were blitzed, knocked down the entire nation's internet through militia bears. Then we have criminal bears. These are people who actually do hackings of credit cards, steal money from your bank account, will go out and lock up your computer for ransom using ransomware, and place false ads everywhere for adware fraud, right? Those people work for the Kremlin because the Kremlin controls all computer networks there. They are allowed to make money. And so,
and what does the Kremlin get out of that? Does it get a cut, or just simply the pleasure of knowing they're screwing things up?
I think to a certain extent they might get a cut. That requires a lot more investigation than is available right now. But these are mafia gangs, and you have to know something. Putin came from the KGB, went to St. Petersburg, where he helped sell off the city of St. Petersburg. The reason he was so successful is he took all ex-KGB officers and controlled the mafia. And once he controlled the mafia, he sold everything. And then Boris Yeltsin saw he was so loyal and so good at this, he brought him to Moscow and made him the director of the FSB, Russian intelligence.
Now, in kind of denying all of this, Donald Trump has pointed out that the CIA has been wrong in the past. And in today's New York Times, there's a review of a book by the guy who interrogated Saddam Hussein, which kind of undermines the credibility of the CIA. The suggestion is the CIA will do whatever a president wants it to do, no matter who the president is. So if it's George Bush, the CIA will tell George Bush what he wants to hear. If it's Barack Obama, they'll tell Barack Obama what he wants to hear. Isn't that a problem in believing some of the things that the CIA is claiming?
You know, the only place that a president of the United States truly has real ability to put his finger on the CIA and make it work is right at the top of the CIA, and then at the deputy director's level. Everyone below that is a careerist, is a person who is there for love of country. In front of I know CIA officers, I have friends who have died, who are stars on the wall of honor at the CIA, who are the greatest patriots that you will ever meet. Can their analysis be faulty? Yes. But the analysis that went into this hack was so technically specific. It was the group that did it originally was not the CIA. It was U.S. Cyber Command and the National Security Agency. The fingerprints were seen globally in many, many other hacks. This was undeniable. And every one of the 17 intelligence agencies concurred with the evidence based on what they saw that this has been done. This is not Iraq WMDs and Dick Cheney telling people what he wants to feel. No one is going to do this for Barack Obama at the CIA.
Do we know who it was inside the Kremlin who reached out to WikiLeaks' Julian Assange regarding the dissemination of these hacked DNC materials?
No, but there you wouldn't know. This would be an operation that would be a covert in nature. I break out the structure that they would be required to have in place to do it. I call it an IWMC, Information Warfare Management Cell. We use this type of political warfare organization. It would require propagandists from Sputnik and RT, people from the foreign ministry, human intelligence officers from the SVR, Russian human intelligence, cyber warfare officers from their version of NSA, and then people to monitor the television 24/7, 365. Then a special liaison like Guccifer 2.0, who is a fake entity, to pass that information on to WikiLeaks. And knowing WikiLeaks would be their laundromat, this would make its way to the global news media and do what it did, damage Hillary Clinton.
And why do you think Julian Assange wanted to damage Hillary Clinton in particular? I would think that as somebody who just thinks that he is spreading the truth, all the hidden secrets, that he'd be just as willing to spread some of the secrets of Russia.
Interesting, but he doesn't. He released absolutely nothing about Republicans and absolutely nothing about Moscow. He, you know, there's a good book that's come out by followers of Julian Assange that show that he had this ideological change where he became a very vengeful individual and is using WikiLeaks as a weapon system. He views Hillary Clinton as the person that got him locked into the Ecuadorian embassy right now in London and took it personally. And he made statements before the election that he personally was going to damage her. Russia saw that, used him. He willfully went along with it happily, and now WikiLeaks itself has been sullied.
And now we're hearing all sorts of stories, and it's hard to tell, considering all the fake news, what to believe. Fusion is reporting that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump were set up by Wendy Deng Murdoch, the former wife of Rupert Murdoch, who, as Fusion is reporting, might be romantically linked to Vladimir Putin.
No, Vladimir Putin is a KGB officer, right? Old school, communist, exactly like you see in the James Bond films. And he loves the organization. He refers to his new intelligence officers as the new nobility of Russia. He will do this operation himself. He doesn't need any cutouts. He has more than enough national capability. And Wendy Deng doesn't have to do anything with Ivanka Trump for him to get, obviously, to develop Donald Trump to the point where he loves Russia in some ways more than the United States and has proven more loyalty to them than he has, certainly to our current government.
And a listener wonders whether Trump might have committed sedition for encouraging Russian hacks.
That remains to be seen. I understand that there are calls now for a select committee to investigate this. This requires very deep, not just congressional investigation, but counterintelligence investigation to determine perhaps it is people on his staff. One thing is certain. Vladimir Putin keeps FSB officers and ex-KGB officers in the pocket of every oligarch. You cannot do anything in Russia unless Putin operates through those intelligence officers and allows you to do it. So if Trump was brought along by oligarchs and bought into their worldview, he has bought into the worldview of the former Soviet Union's intelligence agency.
And haven't a lot of Americans as well?
Yes.
as we've just seen in recent polls, a growing number of Republicans who in the past would have just hated Russia, seen it as synonymous with the Soviet Union, are now full of admiration for the country and think Vladimir Putin might be a really great leader.
It's absolutely stupefying, just the buy-in that the people who love Donald Trump are willing to listen to anything he says and to adopt any ideology that he puts out. And there was a very good article that was written in The Guardian this morning talking about Russia's worldview, right, of how they view themselves as a vanguard of now modern Russian Orthodox Christianity against the West and against modern liberalism of all things.
The immorality of the West.
That's right. And he has brought Donald Trump into this ideology. Trump will never say a bad word against him or any of these things, which are a threat to the security of this nation.
Do we know to what extent hacking was done at the RNC?
You know, interesting, because very early on when we talked after Donald Trump made the plea for the Russians to hack, I made a statement on NBC where I said that is a clarion call to Russian intelligence, not to actually hack Hillary Clinton, but they will need to demonstrate that they hacked the RNC or attempted to hack it. It appears that a month later there was an attempt to hack the RNC. They do not have the cyber capability to resist a actual hack by Russian intelligence. They don't. The way that no one has the ability to resist our NSA, if they want to get into your computer, when somebody spends ₹1 billion to go around the world and steal things, they will steal things. I think it's just the Russians made a scan, as what they call it in the cyber community, where they just went and took a look. But the only people who were hacked were John McCain, Lindsey Graham, both whom are anti-Russian hawks and pro-Ukraine, and Colin Powell, And his emails came out the week before he was probably going to endorse Hillary Clinton, and it discredited him.
Malcolm Nance, whose previous book was a New York Times bestseller, Defeating ISIS, this one, The Plot to Hack America, How Putin's Cyber Spies and WikiLeaks Try to Steal the 2016 Election. It is published by Skyhorse Publishing. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I love the show.